Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Those of you who know me recognize my core belief that without passion and conviction in politics, we are doomed to fail. What I'd like to reflect on today, and this may come as a surprise to some of you, are the inevitable risks that occur when passion and conviction are not sufficiently tempered by humility. How we manage these risks, it turns out, may be just as critical as the fight itself.
Governor Spitzer, from a speech he gave this week upstate, and now Daily News columnist Michael Goodwin. We will talk some about the transit meltdown yesterday, but also about the latest revelations about Governor Spitzer's office apparently withholding evidence from the state attorney general in the investigation of Spitzer's use of the state police to create a false news leak about Joe Bruno. So, Michael Goodwin, welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian. Thank you.
What is this latest? Explain it to our listeners.
Well, in his investigation, Attorney General Cuomo requested from the governor's office the emails involving top aides to the governor in this attempt to get the state police to gather information on Joe Bruno's travels. And in doing that, apparently, now Cuomo did not have subpoena power, that much we know. And what we have learned this week is that in response to the request, the governor's office supplied them with some emails, apparently on the government account, some of which came from handheld, the Blackberries, and some, I guess, from office computers. But what they did not supply them with were the emails that might have been on other Blackberries that these officials also carry. And according to the governor's press person, some of them carry two or perhaps three Blackberries, a political one, she said, which was interesting. Apparently, the Spitzer campaign is still in existence, and they are paying for Blackberries. I think that's the only reasonable interpretation. And then she said they might also have personal devices that are not. So those two would not be billed to the state, and the governor's office took the curious position that the request only covered the government-funded or government-paid-for devices, which is, you know, a legalistic parsing that, as I understand it, Cuomo's office was furious about when it realized it had been had.
Really? So there's reason to believe that there may have been emails sent on these other devices that pertain to the scandal?
Yes. And the governor's spokeswoman, who I think is, obviously embattled by this, refused to answer press questions about whether there were other actual emails on this issue of the smear against Joe Bruno. She did confirm that these people had other devices. So you would, I think, logically conclude if they have the devices, and she admits that, but she won't answer the question about whether there were pertinent emails that were not turned over, we would have to assume the answer to that question is yes also.
You wrote a pretty tough column for yesterday's paper. I guess we'll call that the pre-Diluvian period, when people were still concerned about such things.
Right.
You said all signs point to Spitzer not being an innocent man, and that each day brings fresh proof that Spitzer has something very big to hide. What do you think it is exactly that he might be guilty of?
Well, let's backtrack a little bit, Brian, because I think it's instructive. What did the governor deny? What he denied was knowing about this, participating in this, well, let's just call it a dirty tricks plot, which I think it really was. He denied knowing about it. He denied being involved in it. And he claimed he was misled. And he claimed his office fully cooperated with the investigations by Andrew Cuomo's office. So I think you can pull those apart. On the governor's personal knowledge and role, we have only his word for it. We don't know. Two of the aides did not testify. The two main players, Darren Dopp and Baum, the chief of staff and the communications director. So they did not testify to Cuomo's office. Spitzer's office wouldn't let them testify. So the notion that we fully cooperated is clearly not true.
So I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, and I think as because of that, and now this discovery of the emails that were withheld, we don't know what the governor knew. We don't know whether he was in the email loop, the conversational loop. We only have his word for it, but clearly the investigation was not complete. So the conclusions that the governor wasn't involved, as he claims, or didn't know, we simply know that there's no evidence of that. And I think this is the extraordinary part, Brian. Mm-hmm. You have the governor of New York sort of openly being called a liar repeatedly by the press and by the public. I mean, you've got polls saying over half of the public thinks he's lying. You have one poll where 80% want him to be forced to testify under oath. And the governor fundamentally doesn't respond to this.
Right. And well, you say fundamentally doesn't respond to this, but hasn't Spitzer agreed to testify under oath to the State Ethics Commission?
Well, he says he would love to, but he also conditions that by saying, of course, the lawyers, you know, get nervous about these things because of executive privilege and whatnot. So it's been a very conditional promise. And we don't know what the Ethics Commission is up to. We, you know, would it be private? Would it be public? Would there be any restrictions on questions? We just don't know. It's all very conditional and very kind of suggestive without being clear what he's willing to do and in what forum.
Do you have faith in the integrity, by the way, of the State Ethics Commission? The Republicans are saying this will not be a legitimate investigation because the governor gets to appoint the head of the State Ethics Commission. But other people say, look, Mr. Feerick, who heads that commission, is a man of great integrity, and other commissioners, the majority, were appointed by Governor Pataki. So where do you come down on this?
I think you've raised the two issues well, and I'm just not sure at this point. I think you're right that Feerick has this reputation. He has, and he earned that reputation through this very sort of work in ethics issues. On the other hand, this is a governor's appointment, and I think that the recent experience we've had with the Inspector General, another governor appointee, is really troubling. Christine Hammond, I believe it is, the Inspector General of the state, said she conducted an investigation along with Andrew Cuomo's office, but never issued a report.
Well,
apparently never tried to question Baum and Dopp, did not use her subpoena power, and has now dropped out saying there's a conflict of interest because Baum is her boss.
Right. Well, she did the right thing then, didn't she? She acknowledged the conflict of interest here of her investigating her boss and never did release a report with her findings, which, you know, I guess she concluded could be compromised or at least be seen as being under pressure. So maybe she did the right thing.
Well, except you dropped out one step there. She did issue a one-paragraph statement saying she concurred completely with Andrew Cuomo's findings. Now, that's troubling because when I spoke to her office, one of the findings that Cuomo discovered was that the two people should be penalized or punished, right?
Yeah.
Dopp and William Howard.
The liaison now, with the state police, right?
Right. She did not interview or try to interview either one of those. So how can you conclude they deserve to be punished if you don't even make an attempt to interview them? That's very sloppy investigative work. I don't think we accept that from the New York City Police Department for any kind of a case. So I think that she belatedly has stepped aside, but I think she's damaged the office and her personal reputation.
Daily News columnist Michael Goodwin, my guest on WNYC, as we talk about what he calls the Elliott mess, and we can take a few phone calls on this and on any thoughts you have the day after the flood, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Let me play another clip of Governor Spitzer from his humility speech upstate. And this is so interesting because, I think for a few reasons, but for one reason, because he's very publicly walking away from what has been his public persona in his first 8 months in office.
Without vigilance and humility, righteousness can become self-righteousness. Over the past few weeks, it has become evident that this principle was forgotten. We were fighting so hard for what we believed was right that we let down our guard and allowed our passion to get the best of us. I've accepted responsibility for these failures.
So one thing, Michael, that it seems to me is that the governor in that speech, and he knew that would get headlines for, you know, him taking himself to task about not being tempered by humility and all of that, is that he seems to be trying to put attention on his personal style to move attention away from the facts.
Right. I think that's true. And I think he obviously wants to kind of make it go away. I think he looked for a number of different ways to end this. When Andrew Cuomo's report came out, Spitzer jumped on it immediately, said, I agree with it. You know, we're not going to contest it. That we're going to punish the two people, although rather light punishment. I thought, if you really think they've, you know, really damaged your administration this way. But I think that he's made a number of attempts to kind of move on in the damage control mode and everything, and I think this was the latest. It was a very curious speech, a strange speech even, but I don't think it's going to work. I mean, with all due respect to the governor's desire to get on with the business of government, this is a serious issue of using the police, the Homeland Security Department, the entire office of the governor, the secretary to the governor, communications, I mean, freedom of information law, I mean, the inspector general being brought in. I mean, it's all very shabby. And so I don't think a kind of high-minded speech about humility and power and drawing on historic references, I don't think that's going to put this to rest.
But before we take some calls, and I'm sure because this happens on the several other occasions that we've done segments on this, I'm sure we will get calls from people reflecting what the polls also reflect, which is that, yes, 80% of New Yorkers tell pollsters that the governor should testify under oath and they don't believe him. But Spitzer's job approval is still pretty high at the very same time. And is it possible that we in journalism get obsessed with this kind of thing, while regular New Yorkers are really much more interested about, you know, in knowing about jobs and taxes and health care and reforming what's systemically wrong with Albany?
I think that's probably right, Brian, but I think it's very hard to separate the business of government, the routine business of government, from sort of the ethics and the integrity of the governor. And I think that's what goes to the heart here.
But it has to be relevant to policy to be meaningful, doesn't it? I mean, if the governor
I don't think it does.
I mean, if the governor were to hold a town hall meeting today, let's say just a town hall meeting anywhere in New York where regular people were able to come and ask him questions, how many questions do you think he'd be asked about Darren Dopp's emails and how many about jobs and health care?
Well, I think individual people would have different concerns. I mean, I don't know what the precise answer would be to your question, but sure, he would get lots of questions on different answers. I'm not sure any one small group of people would be terribly representative. Certainly today, they'd be getting questions about tornadoes.
Right.
So I think that these things are relevant, however, to look, at some level, if a governor is besieged by questions and doubts about his ethics and integrity, I think the questions of effectiveness quickly become the paramount one. He may have a plan to do something about workers' compensation or health care, but if nobody trusts him, if he's at war with large sections of the government, including not just Republicans but his own party, I think it's very difficult to say he can get anything done. And that's often the problem, not just in government but in private corporations as well. When the chief executive is beleaguered by doubts and criticisms, it's very hard to move the ship forward. And I think that's where we are right now with Elliot Spitzer.
Daily News columnist Michael Goodwin with me on WNYC, and Pierre in Forest Hills. You're on the air. Hi, Pierre.
Yes, good morning. Delight to speak with you. I can't believe I would think you know. But in any case,
thanks.
I voted for Spitzer. But the bottom line is Spitzer is a bully. Someone very high up at Merrill Lynch told me this a long time ago. Of course, I didn't believe it because he was going after Merrill Lynch and the likes. But he is a bully. And this is just, I think, the latest example of what he really is like.
Pierre, I'm going to leave it there. The line is really bad, but thank you. And Oscar in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Oscar.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
Thank you for taking my call. You know what? I think that the Spitzer is ultimately going to be impeached. I think that enough evidence is going to be discovered because Mr. Bruno is not only looking for exoneration, but he wants to go for the jugular. And everybody smells blood in the water. And Spitzer is going to be either forced to resign or be impeached. Now, if he's impeached, it's going to throw a monkey wrench into the whole legislative agenda of New York. It's going to come to a halt, and it's going to be panic. And that's basically what I believe.
Oscar, thank you. Well, he raises the endpoint, and so let's take this all the way to its possible endpoint, Michael. What if Spitzer did lie to the public about what he knew or even planned along with his aides regarding Joe Bruno? What then?
Well, the first question would be legal. Was there a crime? And that is a tough one to prove in these cases, in part because Andrew Cuomo did not have subpoena power. And so if there was destruction of evidence, withholding of evidence, obstruction, those sorts of things, then that may not be a crime if there wasn't a subpoena. It's a curious legal twist. And even if it was, even if there was no underlying crime, you know, then could you go after obstruction on some more esoteric charge? I'm not a lawyer, but I think those are the sorts of things we would have to face at that time once we got the facts. But then I think the larger question for the governor and any elected official is the question of integrity and trust, and that the court of public opinion is not bound by the rules of the court. And so I think that it's a much more fluid situation, and if the public turns against Spitzer, you know, permanently. I mean, Brian, I think your first caller mentioned the bully issue. Spitzer's job approval ratings came way down even before this. I mean, they were down, I don't know, 15 to 20 points, as I recall, from the high of his victory in the early days down to the passage of the budget and everything, which was not smooth. Mm-hmm. So he was already, I think, the public was already having doubts about his personality. So he doesn't have a base to fall back on at this point. His approval ratings, as you said, are still relatively high. It's in the mid-40s, I believe, or something like that, according to these polls. But that's way down. And I think those things change pretty quickly as new facts emerge.
Liz in Manhattan. You're on WNYC. Hi, Liz.
Hi there. How are you?
All right.
Good. I just wanted to call in and say that I support Spitzer. I really like his bulldog style. I am mad at him for getting caught at this. I'm, you know, obviously I wish he didn't do it, but I'm mostly angry that he got caught. And I'm worried that I'm being hypocritical because I would be furious if this was the Bush administration. And, you know, I try to figure out if I'm being hypocritical.
Liz, with a rare moment of introspection on talk radio.
She must have listened to Spitzer's speech the other day.
Michael, people are making these comparisons, and I wonder if they are overblown for one reason, because of the underlying crime. I mean, it's one thing to try to politicize the entire United States justice system if that's what the Bush administration was doing with those U.S. attorney
right.
firings. It's another thing to, you know, follow around Joe Bruno when he asked to be followed around by the state police anyway for protection, and then just, you know, do what the underlying issue was here.
And also the Bush administration has done so many thousands of things like this. And, you know, the Spitzer administration, I think this is more of an exception. It's not really, I don't think they're really, well.
Liz, letting herself off the hook. Liz, thank you. Michael, what do you think?
Well, I don't think, you know, much matters whether this is the first time or the only time. I don't think we can view these, you know, on a scale of relative violations here. I think we just have to look at Spitzer in a vacuum almost and look at Bush separately with Gonzalez in another vacuum. I mean, that's the Washington issue. That I know for all of us individually, there are sort of emotional or political considerations. But I think to look at these sort of whether the governor did something wrong, what should be the punishment for that, I think we have to consider that irrespective of what happens in Washington.
But again, the underlying crime is pretty small, isn't it? And perhaps it should be stated to lend some perspective to this, or maybe the potential cover-up is so big at this point that it doesn't matter. But Bruno had borderline uses of state helicopters for a long time, And Bruno asked for the state police to accompany him on all these trips. So Spitzer's office had the cops write down what he did. It's not like it was J. Edgar Hoover following around Martin Luther King.
Right. I would agree. It's not on that level. But I think that what's interesting, though, Brian, is that clearly the Spitzer people wanted the Times Union of Albany to do this story, gave them the information even before they asked for it, didn't give them all the information, didn't give them trips, for example, that Spitzer allies took, didn't give them that sort of information.
And let me say that that's one of the worst things to me in this entire episode. It's that they apparently released a purposely false report to the Albany Times Union, indicating only Bruno's political activities on those trips, not his legitimate business, which the state police would also have had to document since they were with him. Is that your understanding?
Yes, and what's interesting about that is that under the state law, which Spitzer's office should have known if it didn't, and the Times Union, I think, did a very sloppy job here, but the state law allowed the use of the helicopters if it was for mixed use. Now, that's a bad law. It should be changed. But if Bruno took 10 political trips but made one stop off for a legitimate government meeting for 15 minutes, then he could use the helicopter for the whole day. That's a ridiculous law, but it is the law. So the notion that somehow this was illegal, I think Spitzer people had to know it wasn't, and the Times Union should have known. But the second point of that, Brian, is that after leaking the material to the Times Union, what's interesting, the Times Union does the story, and Spitzer immediately calls for an investigation. Now, he knew the information before the Times Union published
it. An investigation into Bruno.
That's right. So it's kind of a phony case of outrage.
All the way around.
Right. But then, of course, Bruno trumps him by saying, well, while you're at it, why doesn't the Attorney General investigate how this all happened and whether the police were spying on me? That's how we got where we are.
That's right. Well, next time, maybe we'll do a segment on whether this is a window into the way that prosecutors work in general, and that this is reflective of a prosecutorial style of being the governor, but also reflective of how prosecutors' offices work all over the place. We've heard enough stories of false prosecutions. But that's for another day. Daily News columnist Michael Goodwin, thanks a lot.
My pleasure, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up in a minute, New York Times sports columnist William Roden and the sports soundbite of the week that probably means a lot more than the bonds brouhaha. But we'll talk about bonds, too. Stay with us.